Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.
For joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. A new report by the National Academy of Sciences has reignited the debate over teaching evolution and creationism in the nation's public school science classrooms. Scientific advisors to the government stress the importance of teaching evolution over creationism, saying the latter only confuses students about what constitutes science and what does not. Here to talk about the report, Alan Leshner of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. I'm delighted to be here.
Toby Horn of the Carnegie Institution of Washington. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Diane.
And David Mashey of the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you.
Joining us by phone from Kansas is John Calvert of the Intelligent Design Network. Good morning to you and welcome, sir.
Good morning, Diane. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
Thank you very much. And throughout the hour, we'll take your calls, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Alan Leshner, if I could start with you, the report argues that scientific evidence supporting evolution continues to grow. What evidence are you talking about specifically?
Our understanding of evolution has come from a convergence, a coming together of data from biology, from genetics, from cosmology, from geology, from virtually every major field of science has amassed a tremendous amount of information that has brought us to the understanding that humans evolved from earlier species who, in turn, came about billions of years ago.
So you believe that that evidence has grown considerably over the last few years?
In the same way as it's true of all of science, science is an incremental process by which more and more information is developed. So in the same way that we've come to know more and more about gravity as a fundamental phenomenon understood by science, the same is true of evolution. We have learned a tremendous amount about evolution over the course of the last 100 years.
Toby Horn, the report also states non-scientific approaches do not belong in science classrooms. Why do you believe that creationism has no place in science classrooms?
In science, we collect data, and that's data outside of what we may think about it. And we don't see any data like that in creationism.
Do you believe that creationism confuses students? What do students say about it?
Students have very little understanding of what science is and haven't had much opportunity to really do science, to learn science. So when they're learning about concepts, whether they're scientific concepts or creationist concepts, they don't have much grasp of what that those concepts build on. And this is where the confusion, I think, really comes from.
John Calvert, what do you make of the report's findings?
Well, I am a little bit concerned about the title for the program, and this might help with in response to your question. The program is titled Why Creationism Does Not Belong in a Science Classroom. And I think this really incorrectly describes the issue. For me, the question is whether the state of our scientific knowledge concerning origins should be developed and taught objectively. And I believe that objectivity is particularly important in the science of origins because it is a very subjective historical science that unavoidably impacts religion. I use a metaphor, the concept of a football game, to explain the issue. I believe you'll agree with me that you need three things for a good football game. First, you need competitors that teach each other's contentions, that test their contentions. Secondly, you need a good set of rules. And finally, you need an unbiased umpire or referee that apply the rules and moderate contests. If I was going to apply this to current origin science conduct and education, the two teams would consist of materialists and anti-materialists. The materialists would be at one end of the field. They claim that the apparent design of living systems is just an illusion and that it can be explained by a series and accumulation of material causes, the random interactions of matter, energy, and the forces. The materialists argue that the apparent design of life arose via an accumulation of these, some unknown chemical process, without any intelligent intervention. That's called chemical evolution. One game that could be played is the strength of that contention. Many scientists believe it has no strength at all. The NIST report that Alan just mentioned admits that there is no current theory of chemical origins that is plausible. Another game that could be played about the adequacy would be about the adequacy of random variation and natural selection to account for the very sophisticated biosystems like a ribosome or a bacterial flagellum.
All right, let me just ask you about the statement of Harvey Fineberg, the president of the Institute of Medicine, who co-authored the report. He says, understanding evolutionary biology is essential to identifying and treating disease. He uses the SARS virus as an example, and the report also points to DNA sequencing as well as recent fossil discoveries to bolster their case. Given your background in geology, John Calvert, do you not find such arguments credible or convincing?
Well, the extent to which evolutionary theory actually aids the understanding of cures for cancer and medicine is, in my mind, a real question. I believe that evolutionary theory finds its primary utility with respect to our concepts of religion, because it answers an ultimate question: where do we come from? We had hearings with 23 experts that testified 2 years ago, and many of these are card-carrying, reputable scientists working at universities trying to discover cures for disease. And one of them is the inventor of the gene gun, who is a geneticist, and he said, we don't use evolutionary theory in trying to understand, you know, how to cure diseases. In fact, I've had, you know, there's another scientist I corresponded with. I read his report. He works in bioinformatics. He's a Belgian scientist, and he treats the genome as if it were like a software application program that was developed by Bill Gates.
John Calvert, he's managing director of the Intelligent Design Network. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. David Mashey, is the debate still burning? What does the public say about evolution versus creationism, and to what extent each should be taught in public schools.
Well, the debate certainly is still burning, at least slow burning. It sort of rises or bubbles up a bit every once in a while. But if you look around the country at states and localities, you'll see that there are debates, there are arguments in school boards, state school boards, local school boards around the country, and not just in the South or in the Midwest, but in so-called blue states as well. As far as public opinion is concerned, Pew has done a series of different surveys over the years on this issue, and the data that we get is very similar every time. In the last one that we did in 2006, 42% of the American public essentially rejected evolution, saying that life on this planet had not evolved; it had always been in the form that it is now. And even among those who accept evolution, which was 51% of those that we surveyed, 21% of that 51% said that yes, they believed in evolution, but evolution guided by a supreme being or creator. Only 26% of those that we surveyed said that they believed in evolution through natural selection or Darwinian evolution.
So 150 years after Darwin's theory is put forward, there remains this division within the public. Is it to be ascribed to religious belief?
I think that's the biggest factor, in fact, the overwhelming factor. This is a very religious country. More than 90% of the American public say that they believe in God. 6 out of 10 Americans attend house of worship or church regularly. So, yes, religion is the big factor here.
David Mashey, he's senior fellow at the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. Do join us, 800-433-8850. I look forward to hearing from you. And in this hour, we're talking about a new report by the National Academy of Sciences that has certainly reignited the entire debate over the teaching of evolution and the teaching of creationism in public high schools across the country. I wonder, David Leshner, what your reaction is to this division in public thinking, considering the fact that science has been taught, evolution has been taught, yet there remains this 42% of people in this country who've been surveyed who believe that creationism is indeed part of how we got here.
I think one of the big problems is that many sectors of society cast science and religion as being in opposition, when in fact, for many scientists and for many religious people, they are very comfortable having coexisting scientific understanding and religious beliefs. And in fact, most mainstream religions have no problem with the concept of evolution. And of course, the question of whether there was initially or ultimately an intelligent designer, a creator, is not a scientific question. It's not something that's susceptible to scientific investigation. And therefore, we understand that science is limited to natural explanations of the natural world, and I might add whether we like the answer or not. And therefore, we want to keep in science classrooms science separate from religion.
So you believe that bringing up the subject of creationism in tandem with evolution would be contrary to scientific principled thinking?
Absolutely. You know, we, of course, have no problem in other venues and other kinds of forums to discuss different ways of looking at the world, scientific or religious ways. But we believe that particularly at a time when science is so central to every aspect of modern life, children need to understand what is science and what isn't science, what makes something science. And creationism is not science. Every time it's been subjected to deep examination, the same conclusion has come up. That's why we argue to keep it out of the science classroom. Whether people want to discuss religion and science and philosophy or humanities classes, that's a different issue and, frankly, not our domain. But we believe it's critical to protect the integrity of science education so that our children can thrive in this era that is so science and technology dominated.
How do you respond to that, John Calvert? The idea that, of course, thinking of people who call themselves creationists have a place in public dialogue, but not within the science classroom.
Well, there are two points that Alan made. One is that intelligent causation is not science, and the other one is we have to keep intelligent causation out of science in order to make science not religious. First, the primary author of the report is Francisco Ayala. And in a report published by the Academy in May last year, he says, quote, "The challenge for evolutionary biologists is to explain how seemingly well-designed features of organism, where the fit of function to biological structure in organisms often seems superb, is achieved without a sentient designer." So what he says, our job is to show how material causation is adequate and that we don't need to go to an intelligent cause. That is, so that in and of itself reflects that design actually is an issue of science, and we can test the conclusion regarding materialism or intelligent causation just by looking at the data. We don't need to refer to religious tests.
John Calvert, how do you see that argument coming into the thinking of people who are asked the kinds of questions that the Pew Research Center has put forward?
Well, I mean, if you're, it's David Mashey, not John.
I'm
Calvin.
Sorry.
That's okay. I just
forgive me.
When you dig down and find out why people are thinking the way that they are. There are a number of things at work. The biggest is certainly that for many Christians, especially conservative Christians, evolution contradicts the creation story in the Bible, in Genesis 1 and 2. And, you know, about a third, actually more than a third of Americans read the Bible very literally as the inerrant word of God. So that's one very big reason why many people have a problem with it. But it clearly goes deeper than that. I mean, first of all, it's important to note that about a third of all Roman Catholics and a third of mainline Protestants who don't tend to be biblical literalists, either of those groups, they also reject evolution. And so So, I mean, we have to ask ourselves why do these people also have at least some of them have a problem with it? And I think that I think there are a bunch of different reasons. I think certainly one of them is that many people view Darwinism with some fear mixed with skepticism that we evolved from primitive life forms. Fear associated with things like social Darwinism, and so
survival of the fittest.
That's right. That's right. And I think a lot of people, especially religious people, think that Darwinism is part of a worldview that undercuts religious faith, and by undercutting religious faith, you damage the sort of moral foundations of society.
David Mashi, he's senior research fellow at the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. Alan Leshner, I know you want to make a comment.
Yes, I think that David Mashi has just hit to a core point, and that is that we have done a rather bad job of teaching accurately about evolution in the schools. We've not done a good job of talking about the limits of evolutionary understanding. You know, we talk a lot, we in the scientific community, about its utility and its usefulness, but of course it doesn't cover every issue that has ever come up. At the same time, I think that there is a need, and we at AAAS, we in the scientific community are working more and more with religious communities so that we can talk about ways that people can have this coexisting understanding.
Toby Horn, I know you have taught at the Thomas Jefferson School for Science and Technology.
Correct.
Here in Virginia. You established one of the first pre-college biotechnology programs there. I'm back to the question of how students react to this debate, if they are reacting at all, and to the concerns you've just heard expressed that evolution is not taught particularly well in classrooms.
We have had students who get 100s on exams about the mechanisms of evolution who write down at the bottom, "But I don't believe it." We want students to understand how things work, and then they've got their own opinions about it. But the process of understanding how things work and the process of evolution, the process of understanding what DNA is, comes from so many different fields. And we're mainly hearing about this in biology classes, where there's also an issue about sex education. So there are other controversies. And the biology is based on chemistry. There doesn't seem to be much controversy about the atomic theory, and let alone gravity. It's fascinating, and I think it's really a good thing to get students interested in science, is to think about what evolution is. Because most of the time, students are memorizing things, and they're not debating. And issues of ethics have become something that a lot of teachers and students have gotten interested in. And we encourage this kind of debate about what those mechanisms are. There's plenty of debate about mechanisms. There's the punctuated equilibrium, and there's the regular clockwork. And all of those are acting. And in the scientific community, these discussions are happening, and people are figuring out new kinds of questions to ask, and new technologies are developing. And these are things that it takes time to impart to students.
David Mashi, is that part of the problem, the way that evolution is a tough theory to grasp, and therefore many people come to their own conclusions rather than taking as literal evolution?
Well, I think when Toby was talking a little before about atomic theory and gravity, that people don't seem to have any trouble with that. I think the reason is because those theories do not go to the heart of what it is to be a person, right?
To be human.
Right. The Bible has told us that people were created in the image of God, and it talks about a very purposeful creation, which evolution seems to contradict. And so I think for a lot of people, even people who are not biblical literalists, I think that that makes the theory harder to wrap their minds around. When people are raised in a religious tradition, again, polling seems to indicate that when they run up against something that very squarely contradicts what their religious beliefs are, they tend to ignore that in favor of their religious beliefs.
Alan Leshner.
Hold
on just a moment, John Calvert. Go ahead, Alan.
You know, a lot of this has to do with the way in which this so-called debate is being cast publicly. That is to say, this really doesn't have to be a debate. We don't pitch science against religion. And over and over, religions that see the Bible as an allegory, as a description of an overall process that isn't tied necessarily to literal day by day or the literal definition of a day, those religions understand or seem to understand better how science can coexist with a religious belief or even a biblical belief. It's the literalist point that has a tremendous problem.
At 27, before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. John Calvert, go right ahead.
Yeah, the religious problem is not over the Bible. The religious problem is that materialism, which Alan just acknowledge that science can only explain with natural or material causes, excludes the mind. And so that
hold on 1 second. I'm not sure I understand that. When you say materialism excludes the mind, what do you mean?
Well, when I say materialism, I'm talking about scientific materialism. I'm talking about Cadillacs and big cars. Materialism argues that we just result from accumulation of changes driven by matter, energy, and the forces. And that concept does explain gravity, and it explains rocks and rivers. What it doesn't explain, and the reason why the student says, I don't believe in it, you know, after getting 100% correct, is that it doesn't explain biological information. And chemistry does not explain the sequences of the messages in DNA that define you. And that is the big mystery, and that is what Francisco Ayala says. Our challenge is to explain these messages, you know, with just material causes that lack a mind.
Here's an email from Joel in Denton, Texas, who says, as an educator, I personally witnessed the confusion caused by children being told about both evolution and creation. I am not an atheist, but I have to agree with Richard Dawkins' statement that there can no more be a Christian child than a Republican child. Children must choose religion for themselves, because it's not science. Science, on the other hand, must be taught. Finally, to quote one of my favorite bumper stickers, we have the fossils, we win. John Calvert.
Well, see, the problem is, and that's the reason current origin science education is not objective, because, as Alan mentions, it can only explain with material causes. So excluded from the curriculum is a ton of very relevant information necessary, absolutely essential, to the child's choice of what to believe. Do we come from rocks and rivers, or do we come from mind? That is a critical question, and depending upon how he answers it, he'll be either a theist, he'll have theistic religious beliefs, or he will have non-theistic religious beliefs like those of Richard Dawkins. Atheism is, you know, one of the problems with this discussion is the incorrect definition of religion. The discussion has proceeded on the concept that religion is just theistic, but religion is both theistic and non-theistic. And when science promotes only a materialistic explanation of origins. It essentially is promoting the central tenet of non-theistic religion.
David Marshy.
Yeah, I just was going to just jump in and say that, you know, there is a Alan is right, of course, that some religious denominations accept evolution, and then, of course, some reject it. But there are sort of some in the middle. I would sort of put the Catholic Church there, possibly. They seem to be trying to both accept evolution, but a theistic evolution. And so there is.
Why is there a conflict there? I certainly call myself a Christian. I accept the notion of a creator. At the same time, I believe that there is scientific evidence for evolution. Why can the two not coexist? Alan Leshner. John Calvert. Alan Leshner, please.
You know, your position, Diane, is exactly the same as Pope John Paul II's, as articulated in 1996, when he said basically what you just said, that he could understand the concept of creation, but understood evolution to be a well-founded scientific explanation.
All right, short break here. When we come back, it's time to open the phones and hear your questions, comments, 800-433-8850.
National broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe on the web at germany.info. From the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness on the web at melvilletrust.org. And from the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. This is NPR. National Public Radio.
Many hope the end of the Cold War would mean an end to the dangers posed by nuclear weapons. But today, more nations have the bomb than ever before, and the U.S., Britain, and France are modernizing their arsenals. The state of nuclear proliferation and the movement to abolish nuclear weapons, the Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And as you can well imagine, we are receiving many, many emails and telephone calls on this issue. We'll first take a call from Greece. George is on the air. Good morning to you, sir. Do we have George?
Yes, I'm here.
Go right ahead, sir. Oh, I'm sorry, sir. The call is not going to work. Please try us again another day. Let's go now to Fort Wayne, Indiana. Good morning, Al.
Good morning, Diane. I thank you very much for bringing to the attention of the public this important debate. the basic problem stems from a lack of understanding of how the Bible uses metaphors to teach religious principles. For example, the familiar passage, "Preach the gospel to the ends of the earth," is not intended to teach that the earth is flat. It's intended to tell us to go to everyone. In creation, the principle of the metaphor, and when the Bible was written about creation, there was no scientific understanding as we have it today, but the principles were to teach relationships. When religion enhances its religious message with seemingly scientific metaphors, that doesn't mean that the science is correct or for the present or for the future. And what we have seen is that the Bible, which is now a couple of millennia old, has used metaphors, scientific metaphors, which have changed with today's understanding. Therefore, as an active Methodist and a person who's retired from a career in physics, I accept perfectly well that religion has a very important function in life, but I also accept that there are experts in science who, through their revelations of the natural world, enhance the marvelous works that God has created.
John Calvert, would you like to respond?
Well, I think the best response is just to quote Daniel Dennett, who wrote a review of Judge Jones's decision in the Kitzmiller case. And he said in the review, "I find one point in Judge Jones's decision that left me uneasy. In the conclusion, Jones says repeatedly in this trial, plaintiff's scientific experts testified that the theory of evolution in no way conflicts with nor denies the existence of a divine creator. I have not read the scientific expert's testimony, and I wonder if Judge Jones has slightly distorted what he said. If they said that the theory of evolution in no way conflicts with the existence of a divine creator, then I must say that I find that claim to be disingenuous."
Alan Leshner, do you want to comment?
Let me finish. This is what he says. "The theory of evolution demolishes the best reason anyone has ever suggested for believing in a divine creator. This does not demonstrate that there is no divine creator, of course, but only shows that if there is one, he needn't have bothered to create anything, since natural selection would have taken care of all that." That's what Dennett says. And I think that the problem with a material cause to explain life is that material causes don't produce purpose.
Alan Leshner.
Well, I have to say you're conflating the issue of what happened before the Big Bang. You know, there's a saying in science, before the Big Bang, it's all up for grabs. Nobody understands, and there's no way to test scientifically whether or not there was a creator, whether there was a designer. It's just not a scientifically answerable question. And the fact that you can't test it scientifically doesn't make it true or false. It makes it unknown.
I think
David Marshy.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of this comes down to how you read the Bible. And if, you know, I mean, St. Augustine in the fourth century was questioning the creation story long before Darwin. So people have looked at the Bible very differently over the millennia. If you don't view the Bible literally, then you can probably find a way to make make the Bible jive with evolutionary theory. If you do, I would say it's probably harder for people to make that connection, and that's why I think again so many people one of the reasons why so many people have a difficulty with evolution.
I don't read the Bible literally, and there is a huge conflict. And one of the problems in this discussion, again, is the definition of evolution. Evolution is a materialistic theory of origins. It excludes...
John, I'm not quite certain I understand what you mean when you continue to use that phrase that evolution is a materialistic origin when you compare evolution to Cadillac design and...
Well, no, I'm saying that when I use the word materialism, I'm not using it in the sense that it relates to a love of material wealth.
But what do you mean?
What I'm talking about, and this is what Alan referred to when he says science only explains, quote, using natural causes. He's talking about reducing all of life to simply matter, energy, and the forces. No mind is involved in the construction of the messages in DNA.
Alan Leshner.
So I'm a former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, and I have to say I have a little trouble with your argument about mind. Mind, of course, has been studied scientifically, and we have learned a tremendous amount about consciousness and mental functioning through scientific techniques, and it's not tangible in exactly the same way that a rock or a stone is tangible, but certainly we can measure it and we can observe it. I think that this juxtaposition of whatever you mean by materialism, maybe what you mean is what I'm referring to as observable, testable, reproducible, natural explanations for the nature of the natural world. That's our limit in science. Anything else is non-science.
All right, let's go now back to George, who's in Greece, and let's hope we have a better connection this morning. Hello.
Hello, Diane. Thank you very much. Look, what I'm trying to say is very well covered just in the last 3 or 4 minutes of your discussion. You clearly represent the two sides of the issue, and very aptly. However, I like to say that there's a third side of the issue, and equally as strong but not properly represented, which happens to be all the people, including primarily famous Jesuits, who have been both religious and also clearly on the side of science. Science in the sense that you defined it just so very well in the last few minutes, essentially based on facts, data, and material observation. Now, this does not exclude religion, and all the wonderful texts in the literature have been well argued by religious people.
And that's what it comes down to, is it not, David Mashey?
Well, I think that, again, I think that there certainly are people of faith who are also scientists. In fact, polls show that I think about 40% of scientists say that they believe in a personal God. And again, I think as Alan pointed out a little earlier, there are religious denominations that, in fact, I think the report that we were talking about earlier mentions a large group of Christian clergy who signed a letter in favor of evolution. And again, there are sort of other strands as well. I was trying to articulate it not very well a little bit earlier. And when I was talking about theistic evolution, I mean, in the 1960s, the Roman Catholic theologian, the French Roman Catholic theologian, Jacques Maritain, wrote an essay where he talked about evolution as part of God's plan, sort of leading from simple life to complex life to ultimately human life. So there are definitely different ways that people look at this. It's not just, you know, a group of people who say no and a group of people who say yes.
Alan Leshner, what is your objection to having both evolution and the idea of a creator taught in the public schools?
I actually don't have a problem with teaching evolution and about religion in the public schools, although you have to watch that line between state, you know, church and state, which we're now seeing in the elections being blurred constantly. My problem is in teaching religion in science classrooms. We're struggling so hard in this country to improve science education. Every international study, every international assessment tells us that science education in this country is in trouble. We can't afford to confuse young people about what is science and what isn't by bringing in non-scientific concepts as if they are science. Cloaking non-science in the mantle of science is counterproductive.
All right, let's go now to St. Louis, Missouri. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. I'm calling because I have to say that from what I know about intelligent design, I find it rather ironic when your intelligent design guest questions the veracity of evolution. I know, for example, that there is a somewhere in the South, perhaps Kentucky, there's a museum for intelligent design that has saddles on dinosaurs and has dinosaurs interacting with humans in the displays. That clearly has been disproved by carbon dating.
Yeah, but I've been to that museum, and that's not intelligent design, and I agree with you. That museum uses a theistic preconception that the Bible is literally correct, and we should mold our science to that preconception. Alan Leshner uses exactly the same.
Hold on, John Calvert. Yeah, John Calvert, let our caller finish, please.
Okay.
Oh, dear. I'm afraid he's gone.
The point is that museum doesn't have anything to do with intelligent design. That museum seeks to promote a literal interpretation of the Bible.
All right. Now let's go to Cold Spring, Kentucky, and to Paul. Good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to say that I think that the idea of teaching intelligent design in the classroom is very much like those who want to have prayer in school. I don't think that it is my government's job to decide when I pray, where I pray, who I pray to, what I believe, who I believe in. The job of my government is to make sure that I have the right to practice my faith. Someone else has the right to practice their faith, how they see fit, in their own personal lives. In the public forum, in the public school, it's not government's job to provide anything about religion.
At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Is the same percentage of people that Pew has polled on this issue of creationism, does that show up similarly with prayer in the schools? David Mashey.
Well, I mean, polls that we've done show that most Americans support prayer in public school. Most Americans also, I think the number is about 62%, support teaching creationism alongside evolution. But it's important also to note that the Supreme Court, of course, has struck down efforts to bring prayer in public schools. I know that's not what we're talking about, but they've also struck down efforts to ban the teaching of evolution. They've struck down efforts to include the teaching of creationism or creation science alongside evolution, so-called balanced treatment acts. So courts have not been very friendly to efforts to bring alternatives to evolution or to ban the teaching of evolution in public schools. John mentioned the Kitzmiller case, which is the Dover, Pennsylvania case, which was decided at the end of 2005. I mean, in that case, it was a district court, not the Supreme Court, but a federal district court judge, Jones, wrote a very lengthy opinion, first saying that intelligent design is not science, and then going through the jurisprudence on this issue and basically saying that attempts to bring intelligent design into the classroom or into the science curriculum would violate the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment.
All right, and I think we have time for a call from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Good morning, Courtney. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, my comment was that I was raised Catholic Christian, and I'm currently not overly religious at all, and I believe that if you want to teach creationism in school, that's fine, but it should be taught in a religious theology class, not in a science classroom. As some of your guests have pointed out, it confuses kids on, is this religion or is this science? Does religion count as a science? And I also had a question for one of your guests. I believe it was David Mashey. He mentioned he had done surveys of the American people, and half of them didn't believe in evolution, and so on and so forth. Where was he performing these surveys at? Was it just religious institutions like churches and private religious schools?
Good question, Courtney. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I didn't personally perform the surveys. I didn't have all that much to do with them. But the Pew Research Center and the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life did. They are scientifically sound surveys of more than 1,000 people geographically. The surveys are done So that we cover the geographic and demographic nature of our country.
So you're talking about cross-country surveys.
Yes, and we did not single out religious people. We did not single out certain populations. We wanted to get a good cross-section of the American populace.
Final last brief comment. Excuse me, John. Final last brief comment from you, Toby. Would you be in favor of having creationism taught in a separate classroom?
Indeed.
In public schools?
Indeed, yes.
You would have no problem with that?
Because there are many creation stories. I would not call them myths. There are many ideas from all different cultures about creation.
Toby Horn of the Carnegie Academy for Science Education, Alan Leshner of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, David Mashey of the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, and John Calvert of the Intelligent Design Network. Thank you all so much. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Tanya Weinberg, and Emmanuel Tui. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.